And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Ah, Johnny Donovan, you are right, sir. It is that time again to do our Friday get-together with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Obviously, he did not turn the blue flashing lights on or turn the siren on. Or maybe the subway was late, but he will get here momentarily. I know that he is on his way. Flipper is downstairs waiting on the mayor, as we are. So, he must be right around the corner because I see the entourage arriving here. Of course, this week, most of the noise has been over the dollars and cents that did not come to New York City from Washington. And we will get into that right about here. Mr. Mayor, how are you this morning?
Nice to see you. I'm okay. Sorry we didn't get more money. That's a
well, we'll get into that here in just a second.
First good news is the sun is out. It's supposed to be raining today.
You've done it once again, ladies and gentlemen.
Who knows? Forecast for today and tomorrow is not great. Sunday a little bit better.
All right, let's get into the money deal. I would like you to listen to what Michael Chertoff said this morning, all right?
Here we go.
When we protect a community in Connecticut that happens to be a place that houses a power plant that puts up most of the electricity for New York City, New York's getting protected. When we protect agriculture in Wisconsin that is providing the food that New Yorkers eat, New Yorkers are getting protected.
Your reaction to the director?
Well, we certainly eat food from other states, but they are kind of hard for terrorists to go after, I would argue. You know, there's almost nothing that you can't say is important. You should protect movie studios, because if they got bombed, we wouldn't be able to go watch movies. You should protect Disneyland. I mean, a lot of things to protect. But the question is, what are the most important things? And when you're allocating Homeland Security funds or allocating your police officers or emergency equipment, whatever, what are the targets that could be attacked by a terrorist? So nobody suggests that every single life in America isn't important. But if a terrorist is going to attack, you would think there's 4, 5, 6 cities. There would be maybe 20 locations where, because of symbolism or because of a concentration, they could do a lot of damage. Terrorists would go. And, you know, it's ridiculous to think that New York and Washington, maybe L.A., it's a big port.
Washington was reduced 40% as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's lots of cities in the country, but to take risk-based funds and spread them over 46 is nonsensical. Nicest way to phrase it.
You're suggesting then that there is politics as much as security being played here.
Well, you weren't talking you weren't talking about motive. You're talking about whether they did it correctly. The motive is a separate issue. Politics is. Well, in all fairness, everything in Washington is driven by politics. That's one of the problems with our system. When we take Homeland Security funds or any pot of money, every single part of this country, every congressman and every senator says, I'll give you a good reason why we should be included. Some of them you gag and you say, how can they say that with a straight face? Some of them you have to say, they couldn't be more right, and not just those that are arguing for yourself. So if somebody argues that Washington, D.C. needs more Homeland Security money, I don't think that should come out of I don't think New York should take away Washington security money. They can make as good a case as we can. But it's kind of hard when you get to Omaha, Nebraska, and places that are in the middle of the country. It's true they don't have these big fancy trucks, anti-decontamination facilities, but they don't need it. Now, when it comes to agricultural money, I'd be on the other side. I can understand why New York City, you know, I'm sure our congressman will be out there saying, well, you know, there's this garden plot and we deserve some agricultural money. And if they get it, we all say, they did a great job. But the truth of the matter is upstate New York needs agricultural money a lot more than New York City does. But when it comes to Homeland Security monies, it's exactly the reverse.
It seems to me, in reading as best I can and talking with the people responsible, that one of the reasons that there was such a significant cut is that the federal government seems to view Homeland Security dollars that we're talking about today, the $124 million that New York got, as capital investment and not programmatic investment. Is that true,
Washington,
the way you see it?
Washington traditionally does two things. They don't pay ongoing operating expenses for things. They believe that the locality should do that, and that's always been part of the rules, and that was part of the rules when we applied. Here's our, they said one or two pages. You can see this is probably
the actual application.
This is the actual application I have in front of me, and it is probably as per, I don't know how many pages are numbered.
Maybe?
Easy. Easy. I don't know, because each section has different numbers on it. It's 5/8 of an inch thick, though, with very small type. And I've asked some professionals to look at it, and they said, because, you know, you read an allegation that we are that the quality of our application wasn't good, and I'd like to know, have an independent source. Tell me, our people say it's good. Okay, I want an independent source, and independent people that have looked at this who really do know say this is as professional an application as you could submit to the federal government for anything. But regardless, the federal government doesn't give you operating monies. And they don't pay for capital things, for purchases of big items that you've already bought. Now, that puts the mayor of the city of New York in a difficult position, but I know exactly what is right, and I'm going to do it. If we need something, we're going to buy it. We're going to buy it today, as soon as we can, to get it out there so that the people of this city are as safe as we can possibly make them. It then gives us agita when we want to go and get the federal government to pay for it. They say, oh, no, you should wait for us. And if we give you the money, then you can use their money. But that's a trade-off. We've got to make the decision. Do we want to run the risk of not getting federal money but have the things that will keep us safe? Or do we want to say money is more important? And I think that that's a bad decision, the second way. We should go the first.
One of the things that Homeland Security has said, that eight of the city's programs, including the Counterterrorism Division and Operation Atlas, and some of the health and training programs, fall in the bottom 15% of their evaluation, whatever that means.
Keep in mind, John, I'm never going to attribute motives, because you never know why people do things. So it may be politics. It may not. It may also have something to do with these are the same people who, when the FBI said to us there's a credible threat in this city and we deployed our resources, remember, during the campaign,
right.
And there was all the to-do about
fall,
it.
Right.
And the FBI said, this is a credible source. And some people from Homeland Security, one of the guys told his family, get the hell out. So, I mean, he took it seriously. These are the people that said, oh, no, it's not a thing. And then they had to change their mind because the Secretary Chertoff told them, we're not going to stand here and be the only ones saying there's no threat. The mayor was right. Yeah, the city was right. They deploy their resources when there's a threat. We can't wait to find out whether a threat was legit by finding out after the fact when it turns into a disaster. We've got to look at it. If there's credibility, you've got to protect against this. So it's the same people. Whether this is a little bit of getting even with us for embarrassing them, I don't know. I can't attribute motives. What I do know is that I'm disappointed. It's not going to cut back what we do, I can tell you that, although other things aren't going to get done because there's only a certain amount of money, and we would have used the money elsewhere, but security is right at the top of our list of things to do. And I also want to point out that we've got to apply for funds next year, and there are ongoing programs during the year. So sitting here, one of the reporters yesterday tried to get me to come out and call Chertoff some names, and I said, you know, that's not – if I want something, that's not a ways to get it. Being tough is one thing. Saying you're disappointed, saying it's an outrage, saying that the facts are wrong, saying they went about the wrong process, going and testifying against them, I'll do that. But when you make it personal, that's not the ways to get something.
I know that that's your position, and that's been your modus operandi for a very long time, business.
64 years.
Yeah, exactly. It has worked. It has worked very well. Hold on. I want to ask you a couple more questions about this. Let me take care of a little business. We will be right back.
The fact of the matter is, attacking the secretary personally or threatening the secretary is not a way to drive funding decisions in this department or any other department. I want to be real clear about this. There was no suggestion about anything we did that New York is not the number one terror target.
That is, of course, Homeland Security Director Michael Chertoff this morning reacting to the noise out of New York City. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here on our Friday at WABC. Your reaction to those words?
With the secretary last night, and I expressed my disappointment. I said thank you for the $124 million that we did get. I thought it should have been the $207 or more. I explained to him why. I listened to his explanations as to how the decisions were made. I told them for sure I disagreed. I said, look, I'm going to go out there and fight as hard as I can for to get this change, to get there are other programs where we could get money. There's some conditions apply that are attached to some of the grants we've already gotten. And so how cooperative Homeland Security is with us down the road is going to make a difference as to whether we even receive the 124. You know, they don't just send you a check and say, go do it. That's not the real world. There is next year, and I talked to him a little bit about the process for next year, 12 months from now, because we're going to be right back getting the same thing. And, calling Chertoff names isn't probably the greatest idea to get him to be cooperative a year from now. I mean, I'm sure he'll say he'll look through it, but nobody looks through things that when you personally get attacked. I said you cannot expect me not to be out there and making the case. I just think that the ways they went about it was wrong. I think there's some factual things that are wrong. Forget about the fact that they didn't have the right number of financial institutions or didn't know there are any significant targets in New York City. Just the quality of the report, and that I will follow up with him. We agreed we'd talk on Monday.
Did he comment on the fact that there were statements out of his department that said that New York did not have any icons and or...
No, I didn't talk to him about the details. Okay. What I'm more concerned about is if there is a breakdown within his agency as to the submission that we made and the level where the decision was made right up to him, I want to make sure that if that's the case, we point that out to him and give him a chance to see if there's something he can do about that. If we did something wrong, I want to make sure we don't repeat the mistake again. After all, we go to them for money, so we have to give them a submission that they like. And I want to make sure next year's they like.
Did you ask him about that, or you just go?
Yeah, no, I said to him because I hadn't seen it.
What did we do wrong?
As of last night, he didn't know the details either in office. He said he would look into it over the weekend. I said I would look into it over the weekend. I started this morning and I had some meetings this morning about it. And here, as you see, is a copy of our submission. We actually send it to New York State. Because the government, federal government deals with the states on Homeland Security, not with cities. So, but what New York State does is they just take ours and pass it through. And I want to make sure that they did that correctly and accurately and timely. Everybody's pointing fingers. Before I go point fingers, I want to get the facts. But I'll continue with it.
Also, there was half as much money this year in the pot, if you will, in Washington.
I don't think it was half as much. I think there was something that went from 900 to 700, a number like that. That's not half, but there was a significant reduction.
Right.
One of the things Chertoff said to me is he thought that we were not treated fairly 2 years ago, and last year they tried to make it up to us. And so that last year's was larger than it would otherwise have been, but he was trying to rectify something, and he felt a little bit put upon because if we say, oh, it should be at the higher level. Keep in mind, we will always want more funds.
Let me ask you about that. Is there no number that is enough, is there?
When it comes to spending money for security, there's no ways to answer the question other than retroactively. I can tell you that if we have not been attacked last year, you cannot make the case that everything we spent was a waste. But I can't use that in terms of knowing what we should spend for next year. You have to make some decisions. There's no infinite amount of money. How do you decide how many cops to put on the street, how many firefighters to have in firehouses? I mean, these are all decisions that you consult with experts, and then you make a decision, and God forbid you're wrong. And you know you will be criticized. Whenever, if there is a crime committed on a street corner, you can criticize the mayor for not putting one more cop on that corner or a fire in the fire truck, a firehouse literally next door. Be criticized for why was there not a firehouse next door, and particularly if you move the firehouse to a more populous neighborhood or where you could provide better response on average to a larger group of people. So there's no real answer. We do spend $5.5 billion a year on our police department. That's the cost of labor, pensions, debt service, tort judgments, legal services.
Equipment? Is that a separate line?
There's a capital budget to buy the equipment, but the debt service on that capital is loaded into this. Yeah, this is a real... I don't think there are very few municipalities probably that have as good an accounting system. This is an accounting system. People used to say our police department cost us $3.5 billion, and when I took a look at it, I said, no, it's $5.5 billion. We have $2 billion in pension benefit costs and medical benefit costs. That's the cost of running our department, and so it's $5.5 billion. Our fire department is $1.5 billion. So now you're up to $7 billion. OEM is a much smaller number, but we use lots of other city facilities for emergency things as well. By the time you add it together, you can easily say, oh, we spend $10 billion on security. Is it enough? Nobody knows the answer to that.
Are you at all concerned about the reaction from the rest of the country to our sort of whining here in New York about not getting enough? We got the largest amount by far.
The founding fathers, when they created the Constitution, had this concept that there would be a House of Representatives where the number of representatives was a function of the population of each state. And every state got two senators. Now, if we need to get something through the Senate, that means that the senators from a small state have a lot to say. And if we want them to vote with us, you got to be nice to them and explain to them why it's in their interest to vote with us. And sometimes we've got to vote with them so that they can help their constituents. That's the real world. That's how democracy works. And I take great pains when I go to Washington to go and visit a lot of the senators and representatives from the smaller states. As a matter of fact, some of the smaller states have a lot more power than the bigger states, because the bigger states, certainly in New York, we tend to turn over our elected officials in Washington after a period of time. In some of the smaller states, they let the elected officials stay in office for a very long time. And the way the House and the Senate work is longevity equals power. Okay. Seniority equals power. Right, exactly. So you will have somebody who has been in the Senate for 30 years from a tiny state that has an enormous say over what happens to New York. And you can say that that's not the way it should be. Well, I don't know if it should or shouldn't be. We can have an interesting debate sometimes over dinner and a bottle of wine. Maybe it'll take two bottles of wine to talk about that. But the bottom line is that that's the way it is, and that's what you got to deal with.
So the answer is yes.
I go down, and the first thing, every time I ever go see a senator or a congressman, I always start out by saying thank you for everything that we have gotten from the Senate and the House, and we appreciate it no matter what you read in the papers. Deep down inside, we do, and I've tried to explain that to the people that don't. And then you make the ask. Your kids do the same thing with you. Thanks, Dad, for everything you've done. And oh, by the way, right?
Exactly.
We've all been there. Come on.
So the answer is yes.
Kids
you
are a lot
concerned.
Smarter than some of the people that write some of these papers.
That is such a practical and pragmatic, approach and point of view.
That's why.
Thank you very much.
That's why our kids get so much.
We thank you very much for that. Now, by the way, we need to take a break. We will come back right here at 77 WABC on the half hour, though, George Weber. Continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, everybody. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you. We've got a guest on our telephone this morning, one I'm pretty impressed with. You draw a pretty good crowd, the General Motors CEO, Rick Wagoner.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Mayor. How are you?
Good, thank you. It's a nice day. Let me tell you why Rick Wagoner is with us. General Motors is opening a dealership up in Harlem, which is going to create 150 new jobs right away, growing to a couple hundred jobs. And it is the first auto dealership opening in Harlem in more than 40 years. And Harlem is a part of this city that has been going through an enormous renaissance. People have just not been able to get service locally for their cars and buy good new cars. They have the money to do so. And this is a good thing for everybody, and I'm just thrilled. It's part of our strategy to make sure that all parts of the city share in the renaissance of the city, diversifying our economy both geographically and into other industries. And this is another industry which, will create jobs and give the consumer more choice. So I'm looking forward to, you're going to be there this morning later on?
Looking forward to welcoming you up here. Just had a chance to walk through the dealership and very, very impressed with the way it's laid out, hearing a lot of good things about the kind of traffic from the community and a lot of hiring, whether technician or salespeople from the community as well. So it looks like it's off to a great start so far.
Well, also GM, you should know, John, has a partnership with Safe Kids Worldwide and the New York City Department of Transportation, and they're going to provide free child safety seats and inspections for Harlem families. So, you know, it's a lot of things. GM is one of those companies that really is very sensitive to being responsible wherever they do business, and they understand, I think, that what's good for them and is to have the communities that they sell to and where their employees live thrive, and they're really being very helpful. So
Rick, I've got a question for you. John Gambling here. Is the urban marketplace one that is expanding in the automotive world?
It's a big marketplace. It's growing, and it's generally underserved. Obviously, it's expensive to run dealerships in urban areas, but on the other side, a lot of customers. And so this is a big experiment for us, but we think it's the right place to do it. And, John, just have gotten terrific support from the mayor and his office, Congressman Rangel, really everyone who could help us get this going has done a terrific job of doing that, and we are really appreciative of that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure they will, the residents of
right
Harlem.
After the radio show, I'm heading up to Harlem, and Rick and Charlie Rangel, the impressible Charlie Rangel, Charlie's been there behind this from the beginning. I mean, he's just been working me over an EDC. Come on, we got to bring more business to his district. That's what
sure,
he's supposed to do. And, you know, we have these. I remember we did a press conference announcing this a while ago, and I want to make sure that before I leave office, every single one of those press conferences where we announce we're going to do something, we actually did it. I know it'd be unique, but I'm a believer in doing
Rick
that.
Rick Wagoner, congratulations to you and GM, and I'll look forward to maybe talking with you in the future.
Thanks very much, John. Mayor, look forward to seeing you up here in a few minutes.
See you in not that long. Goodbye.
Okay, all right, Rick Wagoner, who is the CEO of General Motors here in New York City for the reasons we just explained. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We'll be taking your phone calls at the end of the show, as we usually do, 1-800-848-WABC. Elliot Spitzer earlier this week said that the World Trade Center Memorial, the whole project was an abject failure. Tell us where we are in this. This seems to just drag on month after month, and it seems to change almost week after week.
I think you're right. Now, what do you want to talk about? Now, look, it is so complex. We're trying to do something that we are trying to accomplish objectives, multiple objectives that may be mutually inconsistent. We're trying to do things with monies that we don't yet have and are not 100% sure of getting. We're trying to do it in a world where lots of other things are going on. People's interests are changing. The economy switches. Companies and people move around. Let's step back for a second and look at what's happened in the last 5 years. It's almost 5 years since 9/11. New York City unemployment rate is now down to below where it was back before 9/11. Downtown, Goldman Sachs is building a big new building. They could have moved across the river where they have a building. It's half empty. And rather than do that, they chose to commit to build a very big new building downtown. There are cranes all over downtown, all around the World Trade Center site. All you see is cranes and construction
but not
trucks.
Not the World Trade Center.
Okay, but wait a second. It's all part of the same thing. The reason, my point is, we are building out all of downtown, a new park along the east side of downtown along the East River, a new ferry station done, a new subway station down there under construction, the Fulton station going up, the Calatrava one they've on the Trade Center site they've started, a lot of the infrastructure at the World Trade Center site done, 7 World Trade Center is done. So there are a lot of things going on. We still have to get the buildings built on the site and a memorial on the site. And the problem is that Silverstein's insurance is really half of what those two buildings were worth when he took the lease over. Nobody anticipated both buildings coming down, so he had roughly $3.5 billion insurance. It would have cost $7 billion to replace it. The lease says, or the insurance contract says, You've got to replicate. You've got to build what was torn down, except that Rudy and George, when before he came into office, said, and I might have done exactly the same thing, I don't know, we're not going to build on the footprints, which meant you couldn't build exactly the same thing. So I don't know what it means to say replicate. The economy keeps changing downtown. There is a lot of growth in residential. There's some growth in commercial, but not as much. There are differences of opinions as to how big a memorial should be. We have not raised the monies privately that we had hoped to raise. And we can look back and point fingers. I've always thought it would be hard to raise money. It's going to be harder in the future. But every day you go by that goes by without doing something makes it harder. I think we do have an agreement with Silverstein that will let him make money. He has a right to do that. He has the lease. And let him develop something that he can afford to do. The Port Authority building some stuff, they will develop something that they have the money to do. It's a design that we believe is safe. That was another thing that took a long time. I hope it's a design that will attract enough commercial tenants. It's going to bring a lot of commercial space on the market at roughly the same time, but the alternative to that was to have this be a construction site for a very long time, and this is probably, given neither of two good alternatives, the better one of the two. The Port Authority is going to go ahead and build the Freedom Tower, which we, you know, I don't remember people being against this, or very many against it back then, as an icon building, iconic building. We're going to do that. The memorial, we're trying to get a handle on the costs.
Frank Schiavi was put in charge, and I think has a deadline of 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
Will it look differently than what we have seen so far?
I think it's certainly going to have to look somewhat differently because there's no ways to meet the cost. But I can tell you this. And everybody says, well, does it include infrastructure or doesn't it? Does it include this or that? I am not going to sign on, and I guess maybe they could build it without the mayor, but I'm not going to sign on unless it's something that I believe we can identify the funding sources before we start. Because
you don't want to get stuck with the bill.
Absolutely. I mean, people say we're going to raise all this money. Well, I'd like to see some evidence of that. And somebody's got to figure out who's going to maintain this. There are estimates of $50, $60 million a year to maintain it. Our city does not have that kind of money. The maintenance for every other memorial, I've done a study of all of the memorials. I couldn't find any memorial that didn't cost more than a couple million bucks a year. And we're talking about $50 or $60 million a year. Now, if you scale back some of the construction because it costs too much, you would also, in all fairness, scale back some of that. And one of the reasons I thought perhaps you could put a museum, which was not called for in the original design, but if you wanted to do a museum, it seemed to me that the place to put it would be in the lobby of the Freedom Tower, because that's the iconic building and it fits. It really makes some sense. And you're going to build it anyways, so the cost would be. But that's Schiavi's and the governor's taking a really active part. And I've always given the governor a lot more credit than a lot of other people seem to. But there's no easy answers here. We've got to keep plowing ahead, and it's going to be we're going to be talking about it for years to come. There will always be problems. Some things will go well, some won't. Nobody does things of this magnitude. And remember, you've got the state of New York and the state of New Jersey and the Port Authority, and then you've got the MTA, and you've got New York City, and you've got the federal government. There's lots of different political divisions and inputs and the families and the congressmen and senators weighing in with their views, and anytime anybody wants to stir things up, they can always find somebody that objects, and that's the headline the next day. And then everybody stops everything to try to justify. It's kind of hard to build in that environment.
Speaking of,
but I do think we'll get it done.
Speaking
it
of projects,
be easy, but we do.
Capital projects, important ones. Dan Doktoroff, excuse me, one of your deputy mayors. Talking about the rail link between New York and JFK, the fact that you're trying to get to JFK other than the Long Island Railroad air train combination is generally a disaster. But he also talked about the fourth airport, the additional airport to New York City. How critical do you see that?
If we are going to grow, we need better transportation facilities. We are the only major city that doesn't have a train to the plane. It's convenient. London, one of our big competitors for companies and for business, and for the jobs and the tax base we need. They have a great train to the plane. I've taken it, and it really, it's easy to get to where it starts, and it takes you right where you want to go. If you want to go from downtown to JFK by public transportation, you can do it, but you've got to take a subway uptown and then take the Long Island Railroad or a subway out and then take the air train down. Carrying your luggage, that's a long ways to go. People, not everybody would be willing to do that. All of these kinds of projects make a lot of sense. And the population of the city, we're trying to get ready for a population of 9 million in another 15 years or so. In this decade alone, we're adding 325,000 people to the population of this city. That's more than live in Pittsburgh. Just taking a whole Pittsburgh and adding it to our city. You've got to have more transportation. And people are going to fly more and more. That's the wave of the future. And, it becomes more affordable. Everybody get used to it. The percentage
would it
of the population.
Make more sense, though, to spend the monies that would be necessary for the tunnel, for the train to JFK, to think about an additional airport in Orange County with again, transportation as part of that.
People have talked for years about using Stewart Airport up the Hudson River. When I learned to fly, I soloed it first time at Stewart. It's a very big runway. It used to be a SAC base.
Yeah, they run C-5As out of there.
Oh, yeah, C-5As. They used to run B-52s, and those took a lot of runway. They still do, but they're more engine powered today. It's fascinating, incidentally. The main bomber of this country is the B-52H. You know when they stopped building them? 1955.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating that since then we've never replaced that plane and still our main defense. Anyways, the problem with getting up to Stewart is it's a long ways away. I've always thought there's got to be a better way. Maybe if you take a look at a map, the one thing we have going for us is an enormous runway all around. It's called the water.
Bring back the seaplanes?
The Russians are building some enormous seaplanes. And, seaplanes could hold 50, 100 people.
That's how LaGuardia started, the Marine Terminal.
Absolutely. For local, for short flights, let's say Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, Florida.
Florida's water to water.
Right. And you can land out away from everybody and then taxi in. There's no environmental issues to speak of. And, we're going to have to do something. And let me tell you, the environmentalists don't want more transportation because, on the other hand, they do. They want mass transportation. But then when you come to try to – you want to add a runway to an airport, let me tell you, you won't live long enough to see that. I mean,
Let me take a break. 1-800-848-WABC. It'll be your turn to talk with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. If you have a question, that is the telephone number, 1-800-848-WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. Real fast here, hurricane preparedness. Understand that, the emergency management?
Yeah, I actually talked to Chertoff last night about that. We have an extensive plan we've been working on, and it really involves making sure we can communicate with everybody if there looks like the hurricane's going to strike, explain to people why they've got to move, having mass transit so we can move people, making sure that we get to everybody, banging on their doors, whatever. And we have a police department, fire department. We're well-trained. The buses, I mean, MTA, everything I think will work. Taking people to places, typically to be schools, where we have cots and blankets and food and water stored and higher ground. Remember, what we've got to worry about is, number one, you're going to have Nassau and Suffolk County people, if they want to get off the island, they've got to come through Queens. So we have to be able to deal with an enormous number of people from outside the city coming through the city. There are low-lying areas, City Island, Coney Island, parts of Staten Island, parts of downtown Manhattan, the Rockaways, where there's always flooding. Maybe the worst thing that could happen to us would be a hurricane striking New Jersey. That's worse than if it strikes us.
Why would that be?
Because it sends all the tidal
surge
right up through the harbor. If it were to strike Long Island and do an enormous amount of wind damage and that sort of thing, but in terms of flooding in other areas, neither would be great. I'm not suggesting that it should be. And then the question is, you got 24 hours, the forecasters say it's coming. Do we try to get everybody out? Then let's say the storm turns elsewhere, and what the talk shows are going to talk about. You did it for political reasons. You did it to help the sale of bottled water manufacturer. I mean, you know. But having said that, we'll make a decision. We'll err on the side of being conservative and protecting people. That's what we're going to do, period. And then we'll deal with the issue of if you have dogs and cats, you bring them along. And if you have big animals, you can't.
Can we go to Tim in the car? Because I had that on my list of questions.
Absolutely.
To ask you. Tim, you've got the mayor's ear. Go ahead.
Hello, Mayor Bloomberg. How are you?
Good, thank you.
With the Republican convention yesterday, John Fassler was the designated candidate for the Republican Party. Are you going to support him?
That was right on my list.
I don't think he's not the designated candidate. The party recommended him, but my understanding is there is going to be a primary that Governor Weld is going to face off against John Fassler. In a primary, and those two will have to fight it out. And then it looks like, I assume there'll be a primary on the Democratic side. Elliot Spitzer got the nod of the party, but Tom Suozzi, who's certainly aggressive, seems to want to fight with him. So we're a long ways from knowing who the two candidates will be on the November ballot.
Your feeling about the Republicans in New York? They seem to be in disarray at the best.
I think that's a nice way to phrase it. Yeah, there does seem to be an intestine warfare going on. But I think the same thing is true in the Democratic Party in parts of the country, here less so, although Suozzi and Spitzer can certainly have a few nasty things to say about each other. You know, that's democracy, and it's not pleasant all the time, but it continues to plug along.
You got what? We got time for one more real fast.
Why don't we take a look number four, Ken.
Ken, real fast, Ken, what's right to the question?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, he mentioned seaplanes on the Hudson River and using that for transportation. Was he concerned about fuel spills?
I'm concerned about fuel spills all the time. It's absolutely something we got to do. We always have to deal with fuel spills and make sure that they don't happen. You take precautions.
Ocean liners have fuel.
And Ken's 100% right. It is not good for the environment. And in fact, you know, if take a look. One of the things Pataki's focused on is the environment. And the Hudson River today and the East River is a lot cleaner than it was. We have a long ways to go, but absolutely. There was a great cartoon in The New Yorker a few weeks ago. These two guys sitting in a cave, cavemen, and one says to the other, I don't understand it. We've eaten natural foods, we've drunken clean water, we've breathed totally clean air, and we still only live to 25.
On that, we'll leave it. Have a good weekend, all right? And a good week ahead. Mayor Michael Bloomberg will be back here next Friday. We've got still a lot more.